This is Wade's World, and we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
Everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, you always take the weather. You take the weather with you.
This is Wade Brathke. That means it's Friday morning. It's Wade's World on KABF. If you're live streaming, www.kabf.org. We're at 88.3 FM on the dial, 100,000 watts of people power, broadcasting not only throughout central Arkansas, but picked up and rebroadcast on the podcast that'll be available Monday in other cities around the world, from Nairobi to Flagstaff to Seattle to New Orleans, coming to a town near you. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Frank Stryer, author of a brand new book and a very timely one called Guns and Kids, Can We Stop This Carnage? Frank, welcome to Wade's World.
Good morning, Wade. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm so glad we finally got you on the schedule, because your book, basically, your background is as a legal professor, scholar, and you look very dispassionately but seriously at the issues that have to do with our current situation around what is the right thing to do with guns. How did you come to this subject, Frank?
I'm not really sure what triggered my emotions about it, but the more I read it, the more I became sort of obsessed with it and how we abide this in a country that has been so good to children. We were initially involved with UNICEF, and there's more aid given to children by the United States than any other country in the world. Yet we abide this kind of pandemic of child gun violence. It's hard to reconcile.
Because one of the points that is a theme that runs in and out of your book is that for all publicity that some of these terrorist kind of attacks and AK-47s, it's really handguns that are the threat to children, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And you have some, let's just go right to, obviously I've read your book thoroughly. It's an e-book now that's just been published by Social Policy Press, and we'll tell people later how they can get a hold of this this book. But in Chapter 6, you start going through some recommendations that that reasonable people ought to be able to agree to. Let's talk about some of the things that you think we might should do. I mean, where do you want to start, Frank?
I thought we would go with the presentation order that you suggested.
Exactly. So is that, how should we store guns? Is that the first item on the list?
Well, first it was just to discuss the extent of child gun violence.
Exactly.
And will be part of the back of it, which are the recommendations.
Okay. The extent of violence and when it has to do with guns is huge, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I just wanted to start off with a quote from Franklin Roosevelt. He writes, "It must not for a moment be forgotten that the core of any social plan must be the child." I have a particular affection for Roosevelt. I was named after him.
Oh, okay.
My middle name is Delano. So when I was born, he was sort of a god in America.
Well, and he's still worth a lot of respect. Okay, so Frank is for Franklin, and we now know there should be a D there, too.
Right. Well, let's keep it at Frank.
Exactly. And there's some policy recommendations you suggest.
Right. But to sort of give the premise of it and establish the need, I thought we'd look at some of what the research findings were.
No, let's go.
All right. Roosevelt said in 34, it must not for a moment be forgotten that the core of any social plan must be the child. And the research I've done reveals an epidemic of child gun violence. Some of the things I wanted to point out is that a third of all households with children younger than 18 have a gun, and almost half of them store these guns unlocked. So as you can see, this leads to an incredible pandemic. About 3,000 children and teens die from gunfire every year. 10,000 of them are shot. A little more data, a child or a teen dies or is injured every 30 minutes from guns.
Mm.
So that's quite a pandemic of child gun violence in a country that is so cherishes its children. Guns are now the leading cause of death among children and teens. This year, they surpassed the car accidents.
And that's amazing, isn't it? Because we always think of, if people can live through their teens and not driving a car, they'll make it. But to see that guns are now killing more teens, that's startling, isn't it, Frank?
Yes, it's horrific. I'll give a little bit more data, and we'll stop before it gets tedious. But U.S. children and teens are 18 times more likely to die from a gun than their peers in 25 other high-income countries combined. It took me a while to read that and wrap my head around that. It's just so incredible. A little more data, if you wouldn't mind.
No. Set the context.
A teen is injured with a gun every 35 minutes. As far as the number of guns, they're prevalent. The United States has as many guns as people, roughly 300 million guns in the United States. A gun in the home increases the risk of homicide, suicide, and accidental death. A gun in the home makes the likelihood of a homicide three times higher, suicide three to five times higher, and accidental death four times higher. Now, the top three methods of suicides of young people are firearms, then suffocation and poisoning. But young people can get depressed, especially young males. And at that critical moment in their lives, they're looking for answers. And unfortunately, the state of affairs is there's an answer in the house of many houses, and it's a gun.
And that's coupled with the access problem we'll get to as well, I'm sure.
Sure. All right, I'm going to go on, and you can interject at any moment. But
sure.
I just reveal a little more. As far as suicide, there's a huge disparity between suicide attempts and culminated suicide. So young people get depressed, especially preteens and teens. There's a huge disparity between suicide attempts and culminated suicides based on the means that are used. Less than 5% of such attempts using, let's say, drugs are lethal. But if they use a gun, they're successful 90% of the time.
Wow.
Successful is a fortunate term, but I couldn't think of another way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Our firearm fatality rate among children under 15 years old is incredible. The suicides, according to the Children's Defense Fund, the U.S. rate is nearly 12 times higher than in 25 other industrialized countries combined. I had to read that over and over again because it didn't seem possible.
Well, and it affects our reputation all over the globe. I mean, we're certainly seen, if you go travel at all in Europe, I mean, we're seen as gun-happy, trigger-happy, you know. There may not be many cowboys still in the range, but that's the way Americans are seen everywhere around the world these days.
Indeed. Maybe you recall, about 6 months ago, that John Kerry made the comment that young people are afraid to come here because of the guns. And that struck a chord with me. But it is unfortunate. I have some more data on this, is that according to the Children's Defense Fund, the U.S. rate is nearly 12 times higher than in 25 other industrialized countries combined. You have to read that over and over again to realize the magnitude of it. It just seems incredible.
It certainly does. We talked about the most interesting people in the world and the most depressing, because this is a litany of problems that we don't seem to have a solution to, but it keeps being, it's a pandemic, as you say. What can be done about this, Frank? Is there a way we need to go? You've researched it, you've studied it, you have this book, Gun and Kids. Is there a way out of the carnage? Is there a way out of the carnage?
Yeah, it's gun control.
And what does that mean when it comes to what can be done?
I was going to get to that later, but that's in the last chapter of the book is on proposed reforms. Do you want me to go to those now?
Yeah, why don't we? We're talking to Frank Steyer, who's the author of a new book, Guns and Kids, and we're looking now at whether or not there's some real things that can be done about guns in this very polarized time.
By the way, with gun control and the pandemic of gun violence, I wanted to add something also. There was a study, joint study by the Brookings Institute and the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton. Here are some of the findings. There's a lot of psychological exposure or problems that are experienced by young people if they survive the gun violence. There's anger, withdrawal, post-traumatic stress, and exposure to gun violence can desensitize young people to the effect of the violence and increase the likelihood that they themselves will use violence as a means of resolving problems or expressing emotions. Some of the other problems, sleep distortion and withdrawal, post-traumatic stress disorder. They get it. Where do they get it? Where do they find out about violence? How do they experience it? We look to our society. There's a lot of violence in films and television. Do you remember, I don't know if you remember, there used to be a very popular TV show called Gunsmoke with James Arness.
Sure.
And remember the opening scene? He'd come out, guy's face off, and Arness, of course, would shoot the bad guy. And I remember watching that show. I loved it, but it's an indication of how prevalent the notion of violence is. In the United States, we have these popular TV shows, and we're showing them shooting each other. And then with Gene Autry, he'd go dispatch some bad guy, and the next thing, he's singing a tune. So it was just humdrum, mundane stuff, just part of life. So there's a lot of violence in films and TV, but elsewhere as well, in video games, for example.
Well, you know, I'm not going to get involved in all the culture wars, but you really look at things like CAP laws, the child access prevention, and even in states like Texas, they seem to have done something like that, but they haven't done it in places like Arkansas, where this show is broadcast, or Louisiana. What is a child access protection law or prevention law?
It says if the child is able to access it, that there's a criminal penalty. In the states where there's a lot of gun violence, it's only a misdemeanor. In other states where they're more successful, it's a felony.
So this is basically this recommendation to expand child access prevention, but would force better storage. Is that the key recommendation you're making there?
Exactly, but it's just part of the movement or plan that could be implemented if we wanted to take this thing seriously.
Well, I think your book is recommending we take it seriously, and that's what we're talking about. And how about the gag order? I mean, a lot of people, I don't think, realize there is a gag order on physicians, particularly pediatricians. And that how does that work, Frank? I know your book spends a lot of time on that.
Yeah, and it's in Florida, they already have such a law, and it's being proposed in, I think, in 11 other states. I have a particular interest in it as my daughter is a pediatrician at UCLA. But the idea is that the doctors are not even supposed to ask the patient if they have a gun. So that would be pediatricians. So that's called these gun gag laws. And I find it remarkable that you have a doctor who's taken a Hippocratic oath and... the doctor can't even mention, by the way, there's a high probability that your kid could be killed with this gun in your house. Gun gag law says you can't even raise it. So I'm in the process of writing an article, dueling gun gag laws. In other words, dueling interests.
And because really what we're talking about is not, I mean, gun control, I mean, has become the hot-button word, but there's just a question of a pediatrician saying, how are you storing that gun, making sure there's no access to a child, and things of that nature. It's a basic counseling function, is what I read in your book.
Right, right. It should be part of the Hippocratic Oath, but it's come down to writing an article, Dueling Amendments, where the... First Amendment right to speak is being challenged by the Second Amendment right to bear arms.
You spend a lot of time looking at some of the curious ways the Supreme Court has managed to handle the Second Amendment issue. Is there an easy way to explain to those of us who are lay people sort of how they have, in your view, perhaps... distorted the historical context and the constitutional argument?
Well, there are these two famous cases. I'll go through them with some brevity, hopefully. We start off with the Second Amendment, and it says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So in two cities, it was D.C. and Chicago, were being ravaged with child gun violence, and they passed bans on it, and then these were challenged in court. And I could expand a little bit about that if you like.
Sure.
All right. Second Amendment, of course, says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This was very necessary and rational law was challenged by the gun community, NRA et al. And it was a famous Supreme Court case in 2008, District of Columbia versus Heller. And they instituted this ban in an attempt to stanch the epidemic of gun crimes. And D.C. had banned the possession of privately owned handguns. 5-4, the court overturned the bans. And the five represented the five conservatives. Scalia said that there's the militia clause is in the Second Amendment. He said, the militia clause does not suggest that preserving the militia was the only reason Americans valued the right to bear arms. Most undoubtedly thought it even more important for self-defense and hunting. And this is a claim for which he did not and could not cite, any creditable authority whatsoever. But Scalia contended that the preservation of the militia was merely one of the reasons for the right to bear arms.
Even though that's not written in the Constitution anywhere that we can find, is it?
I'm sorry?
Even though that the argument he makes is not something one can find evidence of in the Constitution at all, is it?
No, not at all.
So he likes hunting and fishing. He thinks maybe we ought to, you know, sort of add that here at this late date, 150 years later, 200 years later.
I would bet he would be very happy to do that.
Right. But certainly their reputation is as strict constructionist, and that's certainly bending the thing all over the place.
Well, strict construction, I mean, the language doesn't say one way or the other. It just says a well-regulated militia.
Right.
The right, that gives you the right to keep and bear arms. Well, the people who are holding the 100 million guns in the United States have nothing to do with the militia. So it's merely mentioned in the Second Amendment as an illustration of the need for a gun, but that really is what Scalia used as an illustration.
But some of the, you know, and the court, the legal arguments in Professor Steyer's book are fascinating, and I'd encourage anybody to read them if they want more detail on this. Another, you also make a number of recommendations around smart guns. What are smart guns, Professor Steyer?
Steyer. Guns that you would enter, they can't be discharged unless you enter a secret code. And I talk about that in the last chapter on the proposed reforms.
Right.
Smart guns would be right up there. Yet there's a lot of objection to it. So it's really hard to understand the psyches of gun owners. But they feel that this is somehow an infringement upon their rights.
How about child safety locks? Is that an infringement on anybody's rights? Because that seems like it would save many children's lives.
Yeah, it's one of the several suggestions that a lot of people have been making. I can go through those if you'd like.
Well, there, you know, we have about 6 or 7 minutes left, and there are a lot of recommendations. So, you know, just how much you'd like to share with people. Definitely looking at the hardware is something you suggest might be a way to stop some of the carnage, dealing with the trigger pulls and bullets and safety locks and storage would definitely prevent easy access for teens and small children, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It would save thousands of lives and tens of thousands of injuries. I believe that There are several laws that, short of repealing, my first suggestion would to be to repeal the Second Amendment because it's been distorted out of what it was originally intended. It had to do, if you look at the Second Amendment, with the militia clause. They wanted people to be able to have a gun. They were concerned about a return of the British or a strong central government being too influential in local governance because they had just fought the British in a war, and that was the last thing that they wanted.
Not much chance these days that they're going to repeal the Second Amendment, which is why some of the recommendations you make about storage and access and, well, even background checks. Now, the president has argued as much as he can through an executive order that more be done on really enforcing background checks. Would this really make a difference?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it could help, but it remains to be seen. Certainly you want to get the information in the background check, if there's a record of the person who wants to have a gun. But there's many other proposals that, in the interim, could be passed and implemented. You mentioned, first, of course, it would be the Second Amendment itself because it's being interpreted the way it is by the five conservative members of the court. By the way, one of them is my former prof, Ruth Ginsburg. at law school.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very active person in anti-gun law. But anyway, some proposed changes in the law is first to do something about the Second Amendment. Well, that's probably not going to happen. But you can pass these safe storage laws, and those are pretty important.
And many states have done that, correct?
Pardon?
Many states have passed such laws, have they not?
Very few. And you'd be, I don't have the exact number, but let's see.
I guess it was the children, the cap laws that many states had passed.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between safe storage and cap.
Gotcha. I misspoke, obviously.
At this point, I think Massachusetts is the only state that requires all firearms to be stored with a locking device in place. Then there's the cap, so there's safe storage, meaning you got to keep it away from the kit. And that includes the ammunition as well. Then there are these called so-called cap laws, child access prevention, meaning if they actually access it, you've broken the law. And I list in the book all the states that have adopted safe storage and cap laws.
Right, and many states would surprise, I think, some of our listeners, because they include Mississippi and Texas, which pretty much have been strongly against the so-called gun control, but they do understand that it's important to protect children.
Yep, you're right. Mississippi and Texas are in the group. Another idea is public education messages. Do you remember there was a campaign a few years ago which was on TV and radio, and it said, "Parents, do you know where your children are?"
Sure.
I believe that child gun violence is so prevalent and so horrid that we could also have such a message that said, "Parents, do your children know where your guns are?"
Well, I'm surprised some of the nonprofit organizations that you list in your book haven't already, been producing public service announcements. I mean, I'm sure we'd run them in places like KABF and other non-commercial stations, but I'm sure, it'd be very valid. It must be. Hopefully there'll be some activity in that score.
Yes, I agree. It should be, parents, do your children know where your guns are?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the FCC gives TV, well, you would know this way. The Federal Communication Commission requires you to have a license, and along with the license is the obligation to broadcast in the public interest.
Right, that's public service announcements, what we were just talking about. I mean, certainly we do a million of them, but all stations are required to do them.
Okay, I don't see that many, and I'm not sure how often they...
No, I think you're exactly correct. We need a lot more of this. There's, people, even public service folks, are running away from anything that might be controversial. Frank, the mayor of New York just recently said, let's set up a separate court and a separate group of the police to deal with gun issues. Will that make any difference?
It remains to be seen. I think the mere fact that it draws attention to it will trigger, to use an unfortunate verb, positive responses to gun. It's just making people more cognizant of the problem and accepting that these are children and they're so valuable to us. They're the future. And the laws are, child safety laws are prevalent throughout Europe. Canada, and I don't see why we should be the outliers on this. It just makes no sense.
We've been talking for the last half hour to Frank Strier, who's a legal scholar and has recently written an e-book called Guns and Kids, Can We Stop the Carnage, which is very interesting, includes a lot of data, some heartbreaking stories, as well as specific legal interpretations and policy recommendations. The book is available through Social Policy Press, www.socialpolicypress.org, or through www.socialpolicy.org. It's an e-book, which means it can be available on any computer or your smartphone or Kindle or whatever device you might have. I think it's a very nominal price, just a couple of dollars. This guns and kids issue is something, no matter how you feel about gun control, we have to protect our children. This has been Wade's World on KABF. The podcast of this show will be available on Monday, 88.3, the voice of the people, and broadcasting from Little Rock, Arkansas. Next week, we're going to talk about the cost of medical mistakes. Thank you from Wade's World. Wade Rathke signing off.